This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago in Perryton, Texas. Cleanup is underway after a deadly EF2 tornado. CBS's Omar Villafranca.
Sections of Perryton's main street are now unrecognizable.
An absolute devastation here.
Including City Hall and the fire station. Firefighters searching through the rubble for survivors found an American flag completely intact. Thursday storms were part of a violent severe weather outbreak that clobbered the South all week, with monster tornadoes in Alabama and Georgia, hail the size of baseballs throughout the region, and heavy rain, more than a foot in areas of the Florida Panhandle.
Pride night at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles is facing a protest by Catholics and others because the team is welcoming and honoring an LGBTQ comedy troupe that dresses as nuns. The Dodgers withdrew the invite after initial complaints, but re-invited the group after backlash. KNX's Natalie Tavidian.
This is at least 2,000 people, and a lot of them are wearing red and saying that they're boycotting the Dodgers today.
We're praying because we believe that God hears us and that he will make a difference in what is going on here at the Dodger Stadium.
The Justice Department finds that Minneapolis police engaged in a pattern of violating constitutional rights and discriminating against Black and Native American people. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
The Department of Justice has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that the Minneapolis Police Department and the City of Minneapolis engaged in a pattern or practice of conduct that violates the First and Fourth Amendments of the United States Constitution.
A truck driver who barged into a synagogue in Pittsburgh in 2018 and killed 11 congregants has been convicted on all counts.
The guilty verdicts were never in doubt. The gunman's own lawyers conceded at the beginning of the trial that their client, armed with an AR-15 rifle and other weapons, attacked and killed worshipers at the Tree of Life Synagogue.
The verdict here demonstrates a level of accountability that hopefully will make people feel just a little bit better.
Oren Siegel, vice president of the Anti-Defamation League's Center on Extremism.
When there's accountability for hate and violence, that's always an important message.
Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
UPS workers could soon go on strike. Linda Kenyon.
Members of the Teamsters Union have voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike if they cannot come to an agreement with UPS before their contract expires next month. The Teamsters represent about 340,000 UPS employees, or more than half of the company's workforce. If a strike occurs, it would be the first massive work stoppage at the company since a 15-day walkout crippled the package delivery service a quarter century ago.
CBS News.
Need hires who dazzle without the hassle? You need Indeed. Their powerful platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Walks, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in Western Wisconsin. Good afternoon, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Officials are investigating the death of a child on La Crosse's north side. A call came in about the child around 6:30 p.m. Wednesday. The La Crosse Police Department is investigating along with the Wisconsin State Patrol and Wisconsin Department of Justice. No other details have been released. The outdoor public pool in Chippewa Falls opened today. The pool, which was supposed to open last Friday, needed to delay its opening by a week due to a burst pipe that was discovered in the middle of last week. With most of western Wisconsin in drought, wildfire danger is now high, according to the DNR. Warm weather, low humidity, and drought are creating ideal conditions for fires to spread. So far this year, there have been 551 wildfires in the state and 43 wildfires this week. The total number for the year is about the same as where we were at 1 year ago, according to the DNR. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The law firm of Gingras Thompson & Walks has a track record of making life-changing, positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson & Walks, 855-954-1186.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Teamsters members at UPS voted for an strike authorization vote 97%. You may remember on Monday when we had Michael Sonato on the program talking about this, I said, look, the reality is, you know, this vote's going to come out somewhere between 95 and 98%. The vast majority of people that I've known there who have worked at UPS are ready to take this company on, especially after all of the things that have happened coming out of the pandemic. So am I shocked that it's 97%? No. I thought it would be as high as 98%. I'm here to share some thoughts on the strike authorization vote and where maybe things go from here. I've asked Richard Hooker to come talk with us. Richard is the Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 623 in Philadelphia. I think they call the place where the UPS workers there in Philly the rock or the brick or... Richard, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what's the facility name? Is it The Rock?
So the Oregon Avenue facility, we call it The Rock. The airport facility, we call it The Big House.
The Big House. Ah. So are you surprised by the 97%?
No, I'm not. I expected this. I think everybody did after what has happened, as you said earlier, with coming out of COVID. How UPS has always dealt with our members. This is not a surprise at all.
Now, you know, we've heard very little dripping out of the negotiations. The big news this week was there's going to be air conditioning in these trucks, because we've here on the program talked about stories of UPS drivers passing out, unfortunately some dying because of heat exposure. And look, as climate changes, whatever the reason is, it's going to happen. This is going to be a major issue for your members. So is this a victory that now there's going to be air conditioning or maybe not so much?
I think it's the start of a victory. I think we have to dive deep and see what the language is, because I know there's some confusion over this whole thing around for trucks purchased after January 2024. So there's some concern there. What about the trucks that right now, if you are in the UPS world, you know how UPS likes to manipulate language.
Right.
And this is something they can manipulate. And I also would like to add in that our warehouse workers would also, they're looking for some relief from the heat as well, air conditioning or something, because it's hot in those trucks, we know.
Yeah, well, maybe when they take those little 6-inch fans out of the trucks, maybe you could carry one of those around.
then UPS will say that's a safety hazard. So, you know,
I was just being facetious.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I would like to see some language for our warehouse workers, for air conditioning, airport workers who work in the tugs. They would like to have some consideration there as well. I mean, it's hot everywhere. Yeah. It's hot everywhere.
So, no, yeah. But you talk about the air conditioning in the trucks, and I said the other night, I'm shocked. I think most people are shocked when they find out there is no air conditioning in those UPS vehicles. You know, considering, you know, you can't buy a vehicle with roll down windows or manual locks, let alone something with no air conditioning. But yet somehow UPS has got vehicles on the road that there's nothing. And as Michael Sonato told us, he talked with one of the UPS spokespeople, and they said, well, those little fans are good enough. I don't think those little fans are good enough.
They're not good at all. And UPS knows that. But again, they want to control everything. They don't care if you die on a truck. They don't care if you pass out. They just want the package to be moved. That's all they care about.
Yeah.
So just the AC issue, this is a good step. We just want to make sure that there is no language that the company can exploit in prolonging these vehicles from having air conditioning or the warehouse.
Right. Now, let me ask you this, because I know when in the freight industry where I come from, we went through this, you know, probably 20, 30 years ago to get air conditioning in road units. And there was a date where they were going to have to, all new road units would have to have air conditioning, but they didn't go back and retrofit all of the old ones. And we knew that those trucks are going to probably hang around 10, 15 years. How long does a package car generally hang around the system? If they go and buy a bunch of 2023s with no air conditioning, could a career be made out of no air conditioning in one of these package cars?
Absolutely. And I think that's the plan from UPS. You know, they're not going to be any hurry to buy any new package cars in 2024 when they have already a newer fleet of vehicles right now. So again, I think that's where the confusion we hear and we see, some concerns expressed from our members about that very thing. You know, again, the language is very important. So we just have to see if there's any loophole, if there's any angle the company will try to exploit, because UPS is very good at exploiting language that does not have some teeth to it. And right. This one here seems like there's some things where they can get away from it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, all they care about is dollars and cents. They don't care about your members.
There you go.
And that's the reality in the corporate world. At the end of the day, you know, it's all about the money. It's about the green. And if letting your members, you know, fry in one of these trucks, and you know, some of the videos we've seen, the one of the guy passing out, and you know, the stories of people dying, that's just the cost of doing business to them. Because they don't want to pay the extra couple of cents per gallon to make sure that people are safe.
You're right. And again, that's their business model. Dominate the worker, harass the worker, retaliate against the worker, get the packages moving. If you don't like it, we'll fire you and keep moving. That's what they do.
Yeah, now this is one of those moments where I've had conversations with UPS members throughout the years. And, you know, sometimes they'll be mad at you and mad at the union. And I go, think of how bad things would be without Richard Hooker. Think of how bad things would be without having that union card in your wallet to have some protection and someone to stick up for you and fight for you in these moments. Because here's the thing, and this is the reality across the board. We wouldn't be talking about air conditioning in any vehicle if you guys weren't demanding it.
You're absolutely right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because the only thing that's stopping UPS from dominating us completely is the union. They don't want to pay these wages. They don't want to have to contribute to these pension funds. They don't want to have to provide health care. They just want you to come in, die on the job. And if you don't die on the job, you know, they'll suspend you or fire you for not working fast enough. But the only thing that's stopping that is a union.
Yeah. No, I spent a couple Christmases working at a UPS facility out in Western Ohio. And I remember them standing at the back of the trailer with a stopwatch, because we had to throw 1,200 packages an hour out of that truck, and they were counting, and it was, you know, it was cold, it was freezing in the winter, and it was hot as you know what in the summer, you better get those packages or that was the end of you.
You're right, and still to this day, now they've got more aggressive, you know, more brutal,
more technology.
That same kind, yep, more technology. And they just want to strip the worker of their dignity. Yeah. And they do that by stopwatches and count stops per hour and all these kinds of things. They want to just monitor you, everything that you do. And if they feel as though that you're slipping or whatever the case may be, oh, let's get them out of here.
Yeah, I like to tell my friends, every time you walk by a brown box on the side of the road while someone's making a delivery, and you walk by and you hear that clicking noise, you hear that timer clicking. That, as I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's timing how long that guy's butt's out of that seat.
Yeah, they have so many, like you said, they have so many things to check on our drivers and other members. They know when your seatbelt is buckled. They know if your bulkhead door is open. They know how long you've been at this stop. They know how long you've been sitting over here. They know everything about you. And they're just waiting for you to make a mistake so, again, they can get rid of you.
Yeah.
I heard one of our old-timers say, this is the only company that spends 30 days to train you and then the next 30 years trying to fire you.
Oh, no, I worked for Roadway for 20 years. They had the same mentality. but it just seems it's the corporate mentality, Richard. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're Richard Hooker. Richard's the Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 623. Teamsterslocal623.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do in the Philadelphia area. Now, here's for me, you know, the air conditioning thing is really, really important. But I got to tell you, the biggest slap in the face for me came just recently. I guess it's been several months. We come out of this pandemic. UPS is telling your guys, your members, you're heroes, you're essential, you thank you, you're wonderful, all this stuff. They give them a raise in my local area. It's up to like $24 an hour. And then arbitrarily on a certain, Tuesday or whatever it was, they clawed it all back. And this is a company that's wildly profitable, company that's bought billions of dollars in stock buybacks back, but yet they clawed back that hero pay right quick.
Again, this is who they are. And that's why the strike authorization vote was so, so high. Our members didn't forget. Part-timers did not forget. The drivers didn't forget. Feeder guys didn't forget. They still remember those adjectives. Man, you guys are heroes. You're essential. And then when, you know, the COVID volume slowed down, now we're disposable now. Let us get that money back. Matter of fact, we're going to start closing source down. We're going to start laying off because we can do that. And who are the Teamsters to stop us? Well, they're going to find out here very quickly.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, because, you know, it's interesting that you brought up the drivers, you know, the package drivers, the feeder drivers, the inside people, all the part-time workers. You know, in the past, and I've had this explained to me by both part-time workers and full-time workers at UPS, there's always been that planned division. That created division to keep one group against the other and pitting them against each other so that, you know, their one group's interest maybe doesn't get addressed while others do. Do you see a kind of, in the membership right now, a pulling together and an understanding that you know, no matter what you're doing, you're kind of on the same team in this moment?
Yes. And again, you saw it in this vote. I think the pandemic, it caused us to have to stick together. Because we saw what UPS was doing, right? Like you just said, we were essential, we're heroes, and then all of a sudden, you're taking all that stuff away from everybody. Now everybody's like, why would they do that to us? We just made them the most profitable they have ever been in the history of their company. And this is how they treat us. Now, this is how they treat the feeder guys or the part-timers or the package guys or the warehousemen. This is how they treat all of us. So all of us has to stick together in order to beat them. And again, 97%, that is a high number. And that is because of what UPS has done over the last 5 years in this contract.
So last question I've got for you, and I think the one that everyone's, on the edge of their seat, wondering about, because look, if UPS goes on strike, it's going to be disruptive for the economy. It's going to make things a little bit more difficult for everyone. Is there going to be a strike? Do you foresee this happening, or do you think UPS understands the gravity of the moment and is at the table truly negotiating in good faith?
It's kind of hard to tell. Part of me wants to have a strike. I'm not going to lie. I know that's not politically correct, but I've seen some things over the last 3 years with this company. I've seen how they've handled the negotiations from a local's perspective and a national perspective, and there is no respect. Whenever the company does not show up and bargain in good faith, when they don't show up at all to meetings, when they constantly drag their feet, because we still have two supplements that have not been completely done, to me that shows the ultimate sign of disrespect. We just made you the most money you've ever made, and you won't even come and sit down and sit across the table from us and negotiate. Yeah. To me, I think that's just disrespectful. And I think the only way that you handle this level of disrespect, you need to take them on the street. They need to know that they cannot get away with this. Again, that's me just being, I guess, just angry and frustrated. But I think a lot of members feel that way. And so I'm hoping that this contract just really reiterates what we have done for this company. And they, yep. and they show that in the contract.
No, so we'll see. I hope you get everything that you earn. At the yes. end of the day, I go. You know, people go, no, we want what we deserve. You don't deserve anything. You earn it. You've there earned you this. You've made these profits. You've made this company so wildly profitable that they've got so much money that they buy their stocks back, telling us we can't do anything with this money. We've got no productive purpose for this money but putting it back into our pockets. So for me, if I'm sitting at that negotiating table, that's my point every time.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. And hopefully we have a deal by August 1st. If not, then we'll see them on the side of the road.
All right. Well, I look forward to that day, and I know you'll be here to help us to work through it one way or the other. Richard, I appreciate the time, man.
Thank you so much. And if I can, real quick, June 23rd, 6:23 day, we're having a big rally at the airport. If anybody is in the area, please come out and support.
Outstanding. Richard Hooker, appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I came across this story over at, I think it was Forbes magazine. And the guy wrote, it's time to get rid of labor law. To do away with labor law. Everyone's going to be their own independent contractor, going to be their own boss. Because nobody wants to work for anyone anymore. We're going to all be our own LLC. And look, we've had this argument before. And they're making the argument because, you know, everyone wants to be in, evidently, this is what the narrative is. This is what the paid trolls want you to believe, that everyone wants to be an Uber driver or a Lyft driver or some kind of gig worker, that we've got our own side hustles, that the future of work in America is going to be, for everybody, is going to be side hustles. So what we need to do is just scrap labor law and let people, you know, if they want to work 100 hours a week at poverty wages in desperate conditions, God bless them. It's their liberty. It's their freedom. And look, honestly, in some instances, I'm like, go ahead, knock yourself out. But you don't have an economy built on that everyone is going to be in that world. And as I'm reading through this article, he just keeps coming back to, the old employment, that's broken. The new future is this gig stuff. The new future is the Uber economy. This is what they want you to believe. And I'm sitting here as someone who, you know, kind of studies labor history, and I'm reminded that the Uber economy is not new. I am a Teamster. I've been a card-carrying Teamster for over 30 years. Do you know who the original Uber drivers were? The original Uber drivers were Teamsters. Throughout history, throughout the millennium, Teamsters, they were the ones who transported materials and goods. Now, they are not union Teamsters. No, no. Teamsters who use draft animals, horses and oxen, you know, whatever, to pull wagons and all kinds of stuff. Those were the Teamsters of the past. And their jobs, their gig was get up at, before dawn to feed whatever the animal is, groom, take care of, get ready, and then get to the workplace. So they put in three, four, 5 hours before they even went to work. And then they did their 10, 12-hour day or whatever it was, their sun up to sundown day. And then they went back and they put in another 3, 4, 5 hours of grooming the animals and take care of the animals and taking all of the risk and all of the responsibility. We've seen this movie before. Understand, this is not new. And I love how my conservative friends love these. I'm not going to go there. I love how my conservative economic friends love to pretend like this new gimmick that they've slapped a new name on or put some lipstick on this pig is somehow new. When the reality is we've lived this movie and it was bad. We lived this horror show. It was no good. It was not good for workers. And the only way that it got better is by workers coming together. Now, look, I've been saying for a very long time, I am not 100% opposed to the gig economy. I'm against this whole system right now of people slitting each other's throats for pennies. I spent the majority of my working life in the trucking industry and watched it go from a regulated industry with decent wages, decent conditions, where people were competing on quality and on safety and on service, to where it then became no, who can work for the cheapest? Who's willing to cut their family's future? Who's willing to cut corners? Who's willing to break the law? That became how we did business. And now they want to do that for the entire economy, for everybody, every job. Not just the Uber drivers, but for the newspaper writers and for, you name it. Go down the list. Doctors, people who read x-rays. All of this stuff is coming to a moment where there will be no workers. It's all going to be individuals on their own fighting each other to survive. And that is where the wealth class wants everyone. Individualized, easily separated from the herd, easily defeated. It wasn't until those Teamsters, those people who, loved what they did, the independent contractors of the 1800s. It wasn't until they looked around and looked at each other and said, "We're killing ourselves and we're not even keeping up." Until they stood together shoulder to shoulder and said, we want better compensation. We want better conditions. We want less hours. They came together and formed a coalition. Wasn't the union yet, but eventually they became the Teamsters Union. They became what is now the people who are driving the UPS trucks and the trucks that the Teamsters drive in the freight industry. But those people who were, they owned a horse and a wagon. And they went out and they moved this country. They were the most exploitable people in the economy. And it wasn't until they came together. And this is where I come back to my belief that, this is back again. My belief that we've got to organize again. And look, I've had people attack me. Well, you're against the gig employees. Yeah, I am. I'm against certain ones. If you're doing a gig job that took someone else's job, that is a problem. That's where I draw the line. But if you are truly an independent contractor, I applaud that. Good for you. But if you're taking someone's job that it was their job all along, I foresee in the future, very soon, warehouse workers will be independent contractors. You won't work for the warehouse or the third-party contractor now that you have. You're going to just be out. You're going to be your guy with a truck or your guy with a forklift or your guy with just a pair of gloves. And you're going to be your own LLC and you're on your own. We better figure out quick, because the moneyed interests, they're pushing this narrative. and they're pushing it down the throats of people who, you know, they're making a couple of bucks on the side hustle because they still got a job and they got the side hustle, so they're doing okay. When that job goes away, that side hustle gets a lot less lucrative. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1836. That was the day that the London Working Men's Association was founded. Skilled craftsmen started the organization. William Lovett, a cabinet maker, and a publisher by the name of Henry Hetherington were two of the original founders. Their aim was to promote the rights of the working class. 2 years later, the group drafted the People's Charter. The document outlined a demand for 6 reforms aimed at making the government more inclusive of the working class. One reform was universal suffrage for all males over the age of 21. Another was ending the requirement that members of parliament hold property, which excluded most British people from standing for elections. The charter also called for the establishment of fairer parliamentary electoral districts, holding of annual elections, and allowing for a secret or anonymous ballot. The final item was payment for those elected to parliament. Since it was an unpaid office, people who could not afford to go without a salary were practically shut out of running. Those who supported these measures came to be known as Chartists. The movement grew and garnered support. More than 1 million people signed a petition for the charter. Parliament, however, ignored the petition, but the movement continued to grow. It inspired newspapers, rallies, and even poetry. One poem published in 1841 included the lines, "'Tis the voice of the people I hear on high. It peals o'er the mountain, it soars to the sky. Its shock, like the earthquake, shall fill with dismay the hearts of the tyrants and sweep them away." Chartism as a movement lasted for 2 decades. But it was not until 1918 that all British men won the right to vote. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Why would your local newspaper not even mention an important local news story? Perhaps because it's a damning story about the conglomerate owner of the paper. This month, hundreds of journalists working for major dailies in some 24 cities across America joined in an extraordinary mass walkout from their jobs. They were protesting the rank greed, gross mismanagement, and abandonment of democratic duty by the owner of their papers. That owner is Gannett, a massive financial conglomerate that has grabbed control of more than 200 dailies in 43 states. This is a huge, multidimensional news story about news itself. But where was the coverage? Big story number one. Unbeknownst to most people in these communities, they no longer have a local daily paper. Control over everything from news content to price now belongs to bean-counting strangers at Gannett headquarters hundreds of miles away. Big story number two. More fundamentally, control has moved from journalists to bankers. Gannett is owned by SoftBank, a Japanese hedge fund that has rapaciously looted American newsrooms to grab extravagant fees, salaries, and profits for its rich financial hucksters. Big story number three. The workaday hometown reporters, photographers, and others who actually produced Gannett's papers are making a gutsy stand against the profiteer, not just for themselves, but for the essential ideals of journalistic integrity and grassroots democracy. Biggest story of all. Gannett's 200 papers cravenly joined in a concerted blanket cover-up of this story, stiffing the public they're supposed to serve and disrespecting the ethical stand of their own employees. Even Gannett's flagship paper, USA Today, which regularly reports on other labor actions, took a dive on covering the journalistic malfeasance of its own overseer. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight hedge fund corporatization of journalism, go to newsguild.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday, workers at the Amazon delivery service partner Battle-Tested Strategies walked out on strike in Palmdale, California. And I remember we talked about this, it's got to be a couple of months now, Were these workers organized? And they were saying, look, the first delivery drivers for Amazon to unionize, to help fight for better wages, hours, conditions. And I said, this is historic. This is great. Now, I understand, Amazon's trying to get rid of them because, well, Walmart got away with it. That's why I've asked one of the drivers to come talk with us. Jesse Moreno is an Amazon driver. He's one of the battle-tested strategy drivers. He is a member of the Teamsters. Jesse, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick. Glad to be here.
So walk me through this strike yesterday. What brought it on?
Well, yesterday we went on an unfair labor practice strike. We got this heat coming up and, you know, we have terrible vans, terrible routes. We just wanted to make it clear to Amazon that we're tired of it and we need to make these changes and we need better working conditions. So we got our guys organized and, you know, we walked out on them. We were able to shut down the warehouse.
Now, this air conditioning issue seems to be the bane of this hour of the program, because the reality is, as climate change, as you're in areas that have excessive heat, workers are susceptible to heat. How do employers not understand that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge issue. I mean, we get put in these vans out here in the Antelope Valley, Palmdale, Lancaster area. Heat reaches, you know, up to 120. It gets really, really hot. And then they expect us to deliver, you know, 300 plus packages in 8 hours in vans with no air conditioning. We step into the back of our vans, it's, another 20 degrees hotter back there. It's actually like stepping into an oven, and it's dangerous. We gotta pull over and step out into this heat to combat, you know, the heat that we have inside our vehicles, which goes, and it says a lot.
How many packages in 8 hours?
They expect us to deliver between 250 to 350 packages. And it gets even crazier during prime week, during the holidays. And, you know, we're expected to get these done in a timely manner. If we don't get it done, there's a time limit that's set by Amazon. And they reach out to our dispatch team, who reaches out to us and asks why we're behind. They need to get a clear answer as to why we're, you know, five packages behind 5 hours into our shift. And that's something that is straight brought down by Amazon.
That, I mean, just the sheer number. I mean, stop and think of how many stops that is per hour. And look, even if you're just, you know, walking door to door carrying packages, that's humping.
Yeah. It's pretty hard on our guys. Amazon recently changed their operations to being able to get more stops out of us. So now what they started doing is grouping stops. So say you go down one neighborhood and you drive down one street, you have, let's say, four deliveries on that one street. So you're stopping at four different houses. Amazon will make that one stop.
Wow.
When realistically we're driving or stopping at four different houses. But to them, that's just one stop.
And this is where, you know, you see these videos. I got to imagine that you then run into a lot of problems with the general public. I've seen some of these videos where people are yelling at Amazon drivers because they're just stopped in the middle of the road because they got to go run and deliver this package. And they're yelling at this poor guy. And he's like, look, I'm just trying to make a delivery. We should be yelling at Amazon.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely. They're the ones who dictate our routes, what we have to do, how fast we're supposed to do them. And, you know, if we don't, then, you know, Amazon gets on us, and it falls down on our shoulders to make sure that we're pushing through this heat, these dangerous routes. You know, we're instructed to take these packages to the front doors of our customers, meaning we have to enter their yards where they have, you know, aggressive dogs. I've been chased myself twice already without the knowledge of a dog being in the yard until I get to the front door, and then I hear the barking and I have to, you know, yeah, hightail it out of there, jump over the fence just to be able to make it back to my vehicle. And it's stuff like that where we can't reject these stops. If we leave the packages at the gate, we get in trouble for it.
And now you add this kind of conditioning with wages that I hear are subpar, with benefits that are almost, you know, not the greatest. And no wonder there's an appetite for workers to organize. There's no wonder that you guys have joined the union. Do you find that, you know, as you're explaining your story to people, that there are other Amazon drivers going, hey, yeah, us too?
Yeah, little by little, we've heard other DSP drivers that, you know, want in on the action and want to be a part of the fight, but they're scared because they don't have the numbers that luckily we did. You know, we got a petition going, I think, last year. One of our coworkers was actually trying to get a petition going to get these vans fixed. And luckily, we had, you know, we had good amount of numbers, but it just wasn't able to make a difference. And with us, you know, going on strike, having our petitions, we're making waves, and we're hearing from, you know, other states, other DSPs, that we have other Amazon drivers that are ready to join the fight. And, you know, we just got to make sure that we could support everyone nationwide. And that's what we want to do. We're ready to, you know, blow this thing up. We need Amazon to come to the table, and we need Amazon to listen to what we want. And what we're asking for is extremely fair. Yeah. We want what our brothers and sisters at UPS have.
And look, they want you to have it too. I mean, at the end of the day, this is the idea of, and I go back to, you know, when I started, you know, in the freight industry, 85% of the LTL market was unionized when I started. Everyone had the same, you know, basic wage structure, the same health insurance, the same retirement security, and you competed on service, you competed on quality, you competed on the positive things, not on who was willing to slit each other's throats for pennies. So when I see the kind of competitions that's been set up between UPS Teamsters and you guys, it's almost unfair in the way it's been allowed to be set up, which is why I'm glad to see that you guys are organizing and getting what you guys earn. I mean, I'll tell you, 300 stops in an 8-hour shift, I don't know how you pull it off.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, we get put into some pretty dangerous areas as well. And, you know, we're still expected to meet Amazon standards. A lot of us, we push through our 15-minute breaks. Some of us, like myself, who have different zip codes, I'll drive through my 30-minute break just to make sure that I could, you know, get all my packages done and not get reprimanded by Amazon.
That's
or
wrong.
feel slightly disrespected when I return at the end of the day with, you know, 3-4 packages, and they keep asking me why are they being returned. Like, makes me feel like I can't do my job.
Nice.
When they don't know, you know, being out on this road, what we do, what we go through to make sure that, you know, we get these packages delivered to our customer.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Jesse Moreno. He's an Amazon driver, Teamster member. I got to get this out. IBT.io/AD Solidarity Fund. We'll get links out on social media how you can help contribute. The idea is, look, you know, these folks need a little help. Make a donation to this to help other Amazon drivers get this information. Because, look, I think at the end of the day, Jesse, this is a grassroots movement of working people who have been, you know, I think abused for far too long, coming out of the pandemic where you were told, I'm sure, you were heroes. And we've heard this rhetoric before. I think the moment is now, the appetite is now for what you guys have done. And you've shown that there's a pathway forward. I mean, you know, this past April, you guys organized and won an election and sat down and did some bargaining. This is showing that it's possible, right?
Yes, extremely possible. I mean, we were all excited. You know, we all, I think we were at like 90-something% with all of our members that, you know, wanted to unionize. You know, we got the vote to our contract. We got this ball rolling pretty quick because, you know, what we demand and what we need, we know is extremely fair. So it's time for Amazon to, you know, come to the table and, you know, listen to us. And, you know, that's going to be the biggest struggle, it seems. So, you know, we got to go on strike. We got to do what we can to make Amazon, you know, pay attention. We're not going to go away. It's not going to be, you know, an easy just get rid of us and that's it. You know, the headache is gone. No, we're gonna continue to fight. And anything that, you know, the listeners can contribute and help with, you know, is it means a lot to me, our team, because we need to keep pushing. We need to keep fighting. And my guys, you know, we're not going to be scared that much longer, because seeing the support that we have nationwide is awesome. And, you know, anything that anybody could help means a lot to us. It's going to help continue this fight.
So what do you say to other Amazon drivers? I mean, we've got radio audiences all over this country. Many of them with, I've got Amazon facilities, you know, just down the road from where I live. What's the, What's the outreach to them? What's the message to those folks right now listening going, man, I'd love to have better wages. I'd love to get, you know, air conditioning in my vehicle. I'd love to get better conditions. What's the message to them?
Yeah, message to everybody, you know, all the Amazon drivers is, you know, we started this fight, you know, DAX 8 out here, BTS and Palmdale, but we're spreading it nationwide. Reach out to, you know, your locals, your Teamsters, you know, reach out to them, let them know that you guys are ready. You guys are tired of it. You know, we're ready to, you know, go nationwide. If you guys have any questions, you guys need anything, please reach out. It's scary. You know, it's a $1 billion company, but the support that we have and that we've seen out here in Palmdale is extreme. And it's gonna spread nationwide. Do not be scared. Reach out to your locals. Reach out to the Teamsters. Get as much information as you need, and you know, start organizing your guys underground. Reach out, because we're gonna bring this to Amazon.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because you know a lot of these DSPs are set up as third party logistic firms where they can be set aside. And I understand there's a threat. That Amazon's trying to retaliate against you guys and set aside this battle-tested strategies company. What do you say to people on that front? I mean, I'm going to lose my situation, and you know, as bad as it is here, as horrible as it is, at least I've got this. What do you say to folks?
Well, Amazon has spread a narrative out there that, you know, we were underperforming and that we were already going to lose our contract, which is completely untrue. Our score was up there. We had a great score. I think it was in like the 90%. So that false narrative that they're spreading is just to obviously make them look better, that they were already cutting ties with BTS when I think we are one of the top performing DSPs at our location. You know, they're just trying to play in their scare tactics. They're doing what they need to, you know, make it sound like what we were doing, you know, is not right. And they're already pushing us out the door, which we don't think is true.
A lot of work to do. Jesse Moreno, I appreciate you taking time for us. Good on you for the work that you're doing. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Yeah. Whenever you guys want me, I'll be there for sure.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Jesse. Appreciate the time. No, this is one of those things, folks. At the end of the day, helping workers make their conditions better for them and for everyone else. And I hope folks will check out the website, ibt.io/AD Solidarity Fund. We'll get links out on social media because you're probably never going to remember that. But I highly suggest if you got a couple of bucks, help them out. Going to take a quick break, right back with your thoughts. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. Good working people. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, Pinkerton detectives arrived at job sites across the U.S. to escort workers off the premises. No, it was not a railroad or a coal mine in labor's distant past. It was at the offices of what was once the largest computer seller in the United States. And the year was 2000. Inicom was filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The computer giant had been built on buying computers in large quantities and reselling them. But increasingly, computer manufacturers such as Dell began to sell directly to customers. They eliminated the middleman. Unable to adapt, Inicom's finances were a wreck. They brought in the Pinkertons to usher away employees and change the locks on the office doors. The Pinkertons arrived at the Atlanta office at 2:30. They showed up in Jacksonville at 4. Another former employee recalled his experience, saying, on June 16th, they came into the Buffalo office around 5 with Pinkerton security and a locksmith and said, basically, you've got 5 minutes to grab your personal belongings and leave the building. The bewildered employees were given few answers. The Pinkertons posted signs with an 800 number on the doors they had just locked. Then, at 4:26 p.m., more than 5,000 employees were sent an email from the company asking them to call that same number. When they did, a recorded message began to explain the events of the day. The employees learned that they would not receive their final paychecks, and they had all been fired. But the news got worse. The message went on, "We advise you begin exploring alternatives for medical and disability insurance." The message also said, "Intercom apologizes for the sudden disruption and expresses its appreciation for your dedicated service." Employees were left to scramble for new jobs and insurance without any warning whatsoever. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. I want to start off by thanking everyone this week for putting up with my COVID brain. Yeah, it's been a rough week. I got to be honest with you. Got COVID a week ago. It's just a week ago. I'm still technically in quarantine, but it has been a brutal week. First time I got it. And fortunately, as I said earlier in the week, fortunately the vaccine, I think, helped. I've worked through it, but wow, the fog, been a rough week. So I want to thank everyone, and for everyone who sent me ill wishes, too bad, didn't happen. Not this time. Better luck if it happens down the future. Now here's the thing. You know, I look at what's going on with the Teamsters and Amazon, the Teamsters and UPS. This is an opportunity for this union to really take this industry. And look, I've talked before. I came from the LTL industry, less than truckload industry, where when I started, it was 85% unionized, which meant the wages, hours, conditions were pretty much standardized across the industry. So the competition was based on, you know, service quality, you know, productivity, you know, those kind of the positive things, the things that you want to compete on, not who's willing to starve their children. And yet, you know, as the years have gone, thank you, Jimmy Carter signing trucking deregulation and Ronald Reagan, you know, slamming on the gas and really the shot heard across the boardroom. We're now seeing in the LTL industry like 10%. And wages, conditions, situations, a lot different. And, you know, I talk to people all the time who say things, you know, things are getting worse. Or be forced to cut corners, forced to do all kinds of things that would have never happened years ago. And now you've got all of these pressures from the federal government with ELDs and all kinds of, you know, shoulder, you know, eyes over your shoulder. Again, putting the onus and responsibility and all of the pressure and the burdens on the individual. And this is why I think the organizing that's happening at Amazon is so very important. Because, you know, Amazon has a system. They already got it in place where if you, hey, just want to take your car and go deliver five packages, they'll throw you five packages to drive to deliver on your way home. Because now everyone's going to be a gig employee and they're going to make their profit off of you thinking, hey, you know, I'm just dropping stuff on the way home. It's not a big deal. Not the wear and tear on your vehicle, not the extra time that you're spending doing it. Hey, it's just a couple extra bucks. And what we're doing is destroying the standard of living of working people. And they understand. They know what they're doing. Look, the smart people who think tank this stuff, the smart people who game this stuff out, who come up with these schemes to destroy good wages for working people, they game this stuff out. They know what they're doing. For instance, when Amazon says we don't hire delivery drivers, we hire a company who hires those. So they got, you know, plausible deniability for any of the horrible things that happen while they're feeding them all of the mandates and all of the terms of service and where you got to go, when you got to go, how you got to go, your attire, all this stuff. Because our laws are so badly screwed up. Now, like I talked about earlier, they want to do away with labor laws. I keep saying we need to strengthen them. We need to update them. Yeah. You know, 1938 was a long time ago with the Fair Labor Standards Act. Absolutely. We need a major refresh. Because none of the schemes and gimmicks that they're hawking right now are new. None of this stuff's new. It's just got, you know, different lipstick on this pig. But you know what it is all about? It's about more for them and less for us. It's about more for the handful and less for working people. Because understand, and this is the reality of it. Understand, if it were good for you, they would never allow you to do it. If it were good for workers, they wouldn't allow it. You know, my grandfather always said, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. We're in that moment. We're in the moment of, it's time to spend $2. It's time to spend to get what we need. And if that's politics, if that's organizing in the workplace, if that's organizing in our community, it's what has to happen. And look, there are people who are, they're going to try and tear apart. And you let them go. Those are the fives. Okay. You know, good luck, buddy. You're always going to have people who are going to scab on a job. But the rest of the working class, the rest of us, at some point, got to push back. Because remember, if you will, walk with me, if you will, back to the good old days of, you know, 2020, 2021, maybe a little bit into 2022, when people were heroes and they were essential, and we were thanking fast food workers for going to work so that, you know, cops and firefighters could have something to eat. We were thanking nurses, effusive with praise of our healthcare professionals and the heroic work that they did, only now to turn around and claw most of that back and treat them like garbage now. I'm glad that there's a union out there right now saying, you know what? We remember, and we demand that we be treated as such. You can't on one day say I'm a hero and then the next day I'm a piece of you know what. And I hope, I'm in this hopeful moment that we're going to remember, that people are going to remember what it was like during the pandemic and all of the platitudes that were thrown at us. No raises, of course. This is the amazing part to me. No raises. But we got, they said nice things for a short period of time. Now, how about we demand better? How about we ensure that the future is brighter? Because I'll tell you, you know, the more, you know, the Amazon drivers I talk to, even UPS drivers, the conditions are deplorable. The fact that UPS drivers don't have air conditioning in their truck, that they're constantly monitored. And look, UPS drivers do a great job. They're one of the most beloved working people in this country. Everyone loves the brown guy. But if you knew what they go through, this is one of those moments where wake up. One of those moments where, you know, maybe there's going to be a strike. I hope not, but sometimes there has to be. You know, I think back to, I remember an old timer years ago when I was just a kid, first started out. He said, you know, every 10 years, we went on strike. Every 10 years, you got to, even if it's for just a day, so that people know they fought for something, that they won something, that they take ownership of something. And the sad reality is for the last couple of decades, we haven't had that. We haven't had that fight. And, you know, maybe this is the future. Because his logic was, if you fought for something, if you won something, you wouldn't give it back. You wouldn't be so easy to trade it for something else. That you won something, that you made something better. And look, that's not just in the workplace. That's in society. That's in anything we'll do. And can you look around and say that we're actually making life better in this country? When we've got a media culture that's all about outrage and hysteria, when we've got, you know, the F channel blathering on about something that's not even factually accurate, but just meant to outrage, to enrage, to get people, well, hating each other. I don't understand it. I don't understand how we want to live in this place like this and how we aren't demanding more change. I hope we're going to get there. I'm hoping that the coming weeks, months, and years bring us back together in ways that, well, in ways that give us a brighter future. But I appreciate everyone tuning in, especially this week, which was a very rough week for me. Wow, I'll tell you, it was probably one of the roughest weeks that I've had doing this program. But thank you for tolerating, and thank you for all the people who sent well wishes. I do really appreciate it. And all the people who said nice things, thank you. If you missed any portion of the program, make